Je suis Fusi.
I'm Fusi and you're listening to my podcast.
So welcome everybody. Welcome in my podcast, the Fusi's podcast. And today I'm with somebody really special. Really special for me because he was a huge influence. And also special for, I'm sure, a lot of you guys. So today, my guest is Blade, King of Graffiti, Blade. Blade, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, Blade, first of all, I wanted to talk about... So you're born in 1957, this is it, I'm right?
Yes, I'm born January 1957. My birthday was last week.
I've seen that. So happy birthday, a little bit late, but happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
So you grew up in the North Bronx, New York, in Parkside, this is it?
Yes, North Bronx, New York, Parkside Projects.
Okay, so what was the life in the North Bronx in the 60s? Because you're born in 57, so it was the 60s. What was your life when you were growing up there? What was the ambience in the neighborhood? Who was that?
Well, for myself and all of the original Crazy Five, because we're all born in the Northeast Bronx and Parkside Projects, by the middle 60s, we're all just there, just a bunch of kids playing and having fun and watching the people coming home from Vietnam, like in the movie Forrest Gump. So that's exactly how our life was as children, because 1967 through 1970, we're between 10 and 13 years old, and you see the people coming home from Vietnam, and you see how things were at that era, and of course the music from that time period.
Yeah, and what about graffiti around you? Because I have read in the books or whatever that the movement, the graffiti movement in New York on the subways or what, is born around 1968, something like that. We talk about
A lot of people say that, but it's more like 1970.
Okay.
Because in 1970, I'm 13 years old, and that's when you actually saw people doing a little bit of graffiti on the buses and on the subway trains, but there were no masterpieces. These are just people doing single hits, which they called in the 80s, they called tagging. But from 1970 to 1979, there was no such thing as the word tag. So I don't know why the kids all say the word tag, because that word didn't exist. People didn't start doing masterpieces until 1972. And that's the first masterpiece I ever saw was by a writer named Super Cool 223. Did the first masterpiece that I'd ever saw on a subway train.
And what about before that? You know, for you, it was not graffiti, because when we talk, for example, about Julio 204, it seems like it started in 1967. What do you think about that? It seems it was not in your neighborhood, but are you agree about these dates? What do you think about these kind of dates?
I can't disagree with it, because 1967, I'm 10 years old, but I never saw it. And everybody that says that they were from that time, they don't have a picture that says I was from 1967 or 68, and they have a picture of their single hit on a wall with a date. I've never seen a date that said anything before 1970. So people can say what they want. People want dates. They want proof. I meet people that say what they were doing back in the day, and blah, blah, blah. And then you see when they're born. I'm like, so you were bombing trains in 1971, but you're born in 1961. 1961, everybody, when you're 10 years old, you were in your fucking apartment or your house with your mom and dad, and you were doing your fucking homework. Because 10-year-olds, no matter what country you're in, there's no 10-year-old in the train yard at 2:30 in the morning. You know, you're home in bed because you drink your milk.
yeah, sure. But my point was also, for example, I have seen even recently some video from the Bronx. So somebody filming in the Bronx in 1965. And we could see on the walls some tags, you know, like some writing on the walls. And even with dates, like, for example, it was one Kiki 1964. It was like literally the name with the date after that. So I was like, wow, it seems the neighborhood was already painted, you know, covered of kind of graffiti. Maybe we can disagree about the word graffiti, but it was covered of names. What do you think about this environment? And do you think it was not graffiti? What was this kind of writing on the walls?
The writing on the walls in the 1960s were just like, let's say, you know, Bobby loves Sue, or you scribble down something from your neighborhood. It wasn't the graffiti where I'm like, you know, you see Joe 182, Tacky 183, you see the names of the people that were actually doing like hundreds and hundreds of single hits all over the place. When you saw Joe 182 and Tacky 183, these are guys that are just doing hits all over the city, everywhere, Manhattan, Bronx, Brooklyn, you know, Queens, you see that everywhere. But I didn't see that until I'm a teenager. By the time I'm 13 years old in 1970 is when you see the other names. And 1972 is when I started, and I started doing single hits the way Joe 182 and Tacky 183 did. And I didn't start doing my first masterpiece until 1972, which you see in Jack Stewart's Graffiti Kings book. Just by chance, because he's a Yale professor taking pictures, so he had no bias or favoritism. He was just taking pictures of whatever he saw in the very beginning, from 70 to through all of 79.
Yeah, and this book is you talk about Jack Stewart, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a magnificent book, and that's true. What he says in this book and what he writes is really, really interesting. I think he had already a vision of what was this movement, and yeah, I really love this book too. So, to be totally clear for me in my mind, and to learn, you know, I learned about that from you, which is great. What do you consider, for you, that graffiti, the real graffiti that you made, that you have been part of, that you have been a king of, is born when people were started to go out of their neighborhood and write more often and always the same name everywhere in the city, correct? It was for you the beginning?
That is correct. That's how graffiti developed. And I'm gonna have a sip of tequila right now.
Okay. And like that, you will be even better.
Yeah.
So basically, we are talking about, maybe you can tell me what is your definition of graffiti. Like that, we have something clear.
My definition of graffiti is the stuff I saw on the trains between 70 and 72 when I'm a teenager. And when you saw Joe 182 and Tacky 183, you saw that all over the city, but just single hits. That's the word they called it in the 70s, what it started saying, tagging or tagging up or tags, whatever the fuck that means in the 80s. By the 80s, I was too old, so I don't know that. And those are the original guys. And the first masterpieces were Super Cool 223, Turok 161. Names that people don't know are the people doing the red trains back in the day and hitting the red birds. And those are the things that actually got me wanting to get into graffiti. And the first person to take me to go ever do trains was a guy named Hondo One.
Of course. Yeah. And so for you, it has to be on the subway, right?
Yes. The buses were nice. You know, like the people in Europe, the tram is nice. But that's for fucking kids. You know, the big boys go do the big thing.
Mm-hmm. So for you, you said you started to paint on the subway with Hondo One in 1972, but you started graffiti in the streets, or starting graffiti and finding your name in 1970, correct?
No, I did not do any graffiti in 1970-71, but I saw it.
Okay, you saw it. Okay.
I saw it. I don't want people to be like, Blades is bullshitting and building himself up. I saw graffiti in 70-71, but I didn't actually do it until 1972 when I was 15.
Okay. And You were talking also about the buses, okay? That's something, that's a scene that has not been really, it has been documented, okay? We have seen some tags on the buses or stuff like that, but it seemed in the 70s when you started to see these graffitis, you have seen a lot on the buses. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, of course. When I saw graffiti on the buses, when I started doing buses, I did buses going to junior high school, 127, and on the buses was Hondo, Fresco, Dr. Sex 1, Recon 120, Camaro 170, the first top to bottom I ever saw on a fucking bus, man.
That's crazy.
Was a guy that wrote Neil 182, did a top to bottom on a bus in red and black, but he did the whole fucking bus, man. Coolest thing you ever saw. Because you're just a teenager, you're kissing girls, smoking weed, you know, standing at the bus stop, you're like, what the fuck is that? It's so fucking cool.
So top to bottom with spray paint over the windows?
With top to bottom with spray paint in red and black, Neil 182 on a fucking bus, and 201 and Puff 167, because you puff the joint. Were the guys that were on every bus you ever saw anywhere.
Okay. And you started tagging inside the buses, or it's like that you started?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
With a dry marked marker, and then I would go to this spot with Hondo 1 near where I lived in early 72, and you would wait for the buses to pull in and wait, and you run over to the bus. Boom, hit your name as fast as you can, like the one-up guys do now. And then, of course, when the bus driver came out, you run for your life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe you can talk to us about your first train, your first paint on the subway with Hondo 1. I guess it was in the Baychester layup, correct?
Correct, Baychester layup. Summer 1972. I've been bombing trains for 6 months, but no one had ever done a masterpiece. And we all saw the super cool train, and you're like, you would steal one can of paint cutting out of high school. That time you were like, wow, he did black with orange. I think it's in the Graffiti King's book. The Graffiti King's book by Jack Stewart is the best book about graffiti ever. Because that's how everything began. It's the true history of the way graffiti was from the beginning. And I went out to steal a can of red and a can of white. I went to Baychester layup with a Hondo, Fresco, Dr. Sex, Camaro 170, Recon 120, a guy that wrote Poet, P-O-E-T, and JJS 225.
Okay, this time you paint a masterpiece, or what did you paint?
Yes, that's my first masterpiece. I did a red masterpiece with a white outline with a Gifoam, and that was my first masterpiece. And one in a million chance, Jack Stewart, the Yale college professor, actually got a picture of it and put it on it in his book with the date.
Yeah, because that's a good question also about that. It's like at this period, you have no camera, correct? So you don't take a photo of your pieces? Or what's the situation with that?
No, nobody had a camera in 1972. If you had a camera, you had to steal your mom and dad's camera. And of course, if you steal a camera from your mom and dad, you know, when your father sees the camera's missing, he's going to spank you with the belt and fuck you up. You don't want to be spanked with the belt.
Yeah, so you discovered these photos like years later, correct?
Yes. Yes, we took photos. I think Vam was the first person to get a 126 box camera with the flash cube, and he got a camera at the end of that year, and then we would start taking photos. So whoever, me, Vam, Crotchy, Death, and Tall 13, whoever's was like, fuck, I got to take a math test at school, you would give the camera to Crotchy and Tall 13. They would take pictures of the trains you did on the weekend. I'm like, holy shit, all right, they're in class doing science, bullshit. And then they would give us the camera. So we all share one camera, and you have to steal the film, but you have to pay to get the pictures developed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always been like that. It was always the only problem was to pay to develop your films. So,
and then you developed a fucking film. You had like, I stole a roll of 24, but only 16 pictures were developed. And you freak out because you still have to pay for everything when the pictures weren't right. But you'd be like, well, we got 16 pictures of 24. That was a good deal because the camera is free and you're stealing the film, but you had to pay for pictures and everybody's getting an allowance of like 10 cents to 25 cents a week.
Yeah, and that's the same with your spray cans, correct? You have to steal them because today it's kind of like, okay, it's a big industry, you can buy your spray cans, you can it's kind of about money, you know, but at this period you had to steal your paint. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because we are not talking about like taking two or three cans, we talk about taking hundreds of cans. So can you talk about that a little bit?
When you got to the point where you're doing hundreds of cans within, let's say, a week or two, but that would be like 1975, 1976 when graffiti was really developed. In 1972, if you stole the can of red and a can of white in 1 week, that was fucking unbelievable, because you're like, I got two colors. In 1973, you'd be like between, because you got to do your school, you got to go home and you got to do chores. And then when you got to cut out of school to steal the paint, when you go in the paint store, you're hoping it's like, oh my God, look, I got one can. That was a fucking major score, 72, 73. And then people started doing pieces. If you look at the Blade King graffiti book and you go from 72 to 73, so by 1975, I'm like, holy shit, that guy did a red piece with a white 3D with a delta blue cloud and like school bus yellow designs. That means you have four cans.
Mm-hmm. And that was a huge deal.
That was huge if you had four cans. I did my snowman in the Christmas 1974. They were like, Blake, you had two cans of red, one can of white, one can of Marlin blue, and a can of black. That means you had five cans to do one masterpiece. That was fucking unbelievable. 1974.
And in the same time, we have also to talk about the fact that it's only in 1972 that you discover, or people discover, the Fat Cap, correct?
Yes, super cool, super cool. Found it. If your mom, I don't know if you have your parents are alive, but when you have to clean the oven, when you clean it inside of an oven, whether it's then or now, 50 years later, when you spray inside of an oven with double glaze, it comes out fucking huge.
That's funny, because it's the same in Europe. We use the Fat Cap from an oven cleaner too. So yeah, that was it. So it's super cool to 223 who discovered this Fat Cap, correct? And it changed totally.
He did it. He did the first masterpiece on a train. Anybody says anything different, they can speak to me and I can look right at them and be like, you're a fucking liar.
Mm-hmm. So it changed totally the game, I guess, to have a wider line like that, wider spray.
Of course, as soon as you had a wider line, you can make everything bigger.
Of course.
Right? So as soon as you can make it bigger, you had Gifoam oven cleaner to put on Red Devil spray paint only. You had Niagara and Scotchgard to put on Rust-Oleum because that would make that bigger. And even if it was squirt out all over your fucking fingers and all over your hand, you kept squeezing it down on a Rust-Oleum can. And nobody used Krylon till later. Everybody in the beginning used Red Devil spray paint with the lead in the paint from 1972 to 1977, all the paint in New York had lead.
Mm, okay. And you also tag in the inside of the cars, or you do only the outside?
No, I go from buses to doing the outside. We did the inside later because the inside, you just did lots of hits. You go one train car to another. If people are in the train car, old people that were 35, which I thought was funny, you know, from my point of view now being almost 70, it's like these are people coming home from work. You lean right through people because you're 15 or 16, and you start doing graffiti inside the train with a drippy, drippy marker, even though people are inside the train with their suit and ties coming home from work. You did it anyway.
What was the reaction of these people? They were yelling at you? They were afraid? They were what?
Yes, they're yelling and screaming at you, but there's no cell phones. There's no nothing you can do. So you're yelling, but I'm like, hey, you're some 35-year-old guy getting white hair, and there's like 8 or 10 guys, 16, 17 years old, will fuck you up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just shut up and you let it go.
And then you shut up and you sit there with your briefcase and read the newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. That's better.
Now, I don't laugh now because I'm almost 70. I don't laugh at that now because I'm like, holy shit, I'm the guy on the other side of old and fucked.
This is how life do with everybody. At some moment, you're on the other side. You know, you have another perspective. That's always like that, it seems. And so...
Well, how old are you now?
Me? I'm 48.
God, you're fucked, right? If you're 48, you can see the 50 candles. You're like, what the fuck, man?
Exactly. Exactly the same. This is why I was telling you that. It's exactly the same perspective now. I'm like, what the fuck? But... So, you're young. What's your situation at school? Are you still going to school in 1972, 74, like at this period? Are you still going to school? Yeah.
Yes, you could still go to school in 1972, but the rules were different. If you went to school in 1972, when me and Comet are going to school, Vam, Crotchy, Death, Ajax, Super Cool, Phase 2, all of us are in the same school. But if you check into school 8, 9 in the morning, as soon as you go in the hall room, you cut out of school for the whole day, but it shows that you were at school. So you go out all day, you're just smoking marijuana, you're smoking hash, you're getting the good stuff because the guys are coming home from Vietnam like Forrest Gump, and then you're out stealing all day. I want pizza and fucking burgers, everything. You eat every fucking thing you want, drinking milkshakes. And when you went to show your parents your report card, it showed even though you were getting C's and D's, but your attendance was good. Then they changed the rules, I guess later in the 80s or 90s. So you had to go and check into each class, and that fucked it up.
Okay, so you're doing that. During the day, you're basically stealing paint, smoking weed, tagging and everything, and...
Kissing girls.
Oh, yeah, girls. And so, but you moved in another neighborhood, correct? Still in the Bronx, but you are in Co-op City, correct?
Yes, that's maybe 30 minutes from where the original Crazy Five was born.
Okay. So you spend your time, most of the time in Parkside with your friends who are now the Crazy Five. I think it's 1974 that the Crazy Five is created, correct?
It's created by a guy named Death, D-E-A-T-H. He wrote Death and Rocks. You can see it in the Graffiti Kings book.
So it's created by... by Death and Tool 13 and all these other guys. So they are your friends, correct? And they are not just a graffiti crew. They are really a group of friends.
Yes, a group of friends, and we just wanted to start doing graffiti. And what was good is that the names had meaning, where now people write these names, and they're just writing names because they like the letters for doing masterpieces. We didn't know about doing letters for masterpieces. So Tool 13 was for the music group Jethro Tull, and number 13 was Will Chamberlain's number that played basketball.
Okay.
Crotchy was because he was crazy for cheese. Right? Vam meant very amazing Mr. Mike.
Okay. And you, where came your name? Where it came from?
My name came when I was starting to get my first job when I'm 15. My name was Blade because I'm the kid at the store. When you go in any supermarket anywhere in the world, the kid working in the aisles, cutting the boxes open and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was the kid cutting the boxes open. So everywhere I went, I had my blade with me.
Okay. So you chose this name because you had your blade. Okay. It makes sense.
I chose Blade because that was the blade I always had in my back pocket with my job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we jump in a little bit in time. We are in 1974. You spend your time in your Parkside neighborhood with your friends, the Crazy Five. Can you tell us a little bit about your everyday life at this moment?
Well, right after you cut out of school around 9, 10 in the morning, you go out stealing paint all day long. You sneak on the trains. You know, you try to kiss as many girls as you can just for fuck's sake to have fun. And then Van was with Puppy. I was with a girl named Karen. And you just kiss, you know, and make out. And if you're lucky, when you're painting the trains, we take the girls to paint trains with us. And if it was winter, you go inside the train to be warm. If you're in 1974, I was with a girl named Karen. And Van was with a girl named Puppy. So we do Blade and Karen, Michael, Puppy, and do different trains for the girls. But if you're 17, because Van is 1 week younger than me, if you could actually get to a girl to come on the train tracks with you and you get to go inside, like, you know, it's December, January, it's very fucking cold, and you go inside and you're kissing and you're making out, and if you're lucky, you get to squeeze her tits or something.
Yeah.
And that was like a major score.
Yeah. And these girls, are they graffiti writers or they are just with the graffiti writers?
They're just with the graffiti writers. But what was good is in 1974, the women in America had these giant pocketbooks, right? So when people were getting hip, there's like 5 or 10,000 graffiti writers in New York by 1974. And as soon as I walk in a store, they're going to watch me, make sure I'm not stealing, make sure Bam's not stealing as an Italian guy. And of course, we'd walk around to the other side of the store, and Karen and Puppy would fill up their pocketbooks with spray paint because nobody would watch a girl.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they were partners too.
Yes, and with their partners, and what was good is like, okay, boom, each girl comes out, they got 10 cans in each pocketbook, bang, you have 20 cans of paint in fucking 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that was a big score. And at what moment the paint were under this kind of cage in the stores? Because at some point they locked the spray cans, correct?
Yes, some of the Woolworths locked the spray paint, but most places did not lock the spray paint. Auto stores you can get spray paint from, but they didn't lock the spray paint until later. But what was so good is if you go in a store and you got a really good girlfriend, of course, they're going to follow the black guy, and they're going to follow Van, because Van looked crazy with the long hippie hair. And the girls would get all the paint, and then we'd go to the train tunnels, the train layups right near our house. And the projects in the 1960s and 70s had no locks on the doors. So if the police come and they chase you, you can climb down the L pillar, run into the project, and you run over the top of roofs of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And you could almost be like in another area within 5 or 10 minutes, you were in a different neighborhood.
So this is interesting. You said you climbed the pillars from the elevated line, correct? It was your way to go on the tracks?
Yes. If the police, you could be like the fucking police are sitting on, let's say it's Burke Avenue layup where we're born. The police are waiting there for the graffiti kids. You go to the next station, holy shit, the police are waiting on Allerton Avenue. So Death of the Crazy Five figured a way with our sneakers to climb up the center of the pole in the middle, and you take the double shopping bag of plastic, carry 10 cans in your teeth, climb up the pole, and then you can fit through the tracks of the boards because we were so skinny.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is 60, 70 kilos.
Yeah. You're young, and yeah, it's like that. It's like that.
Yes. Now it's not like that now.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, and there was something important that you said several times, especially in some books or what. It was also in this neighborhood, and particularly in your crew, it seemed like the racism was not that much developed. You know, it seemed like some of your guys are like Italian, some are like other
nationalities. I was the only black guy.
You are okay. Was it a problem, or who was the situation with that? Because we know that also New York was also separated in kind of neighborhoods with Jewish people, Italian people, African American people. It was kind of split in some different kind of people.
In some areas, it was like that. Where I was born, in the Northeast Bronx. The guy that invented the Crazy Five, Depp, he was Irish. Vam is Italian. Crotchy is Jewish. 12, 13 is Yugoslavian. Ajax 1 was Portuguese. Comet's Italian. Silvertips is Italian. Fritz 219 is Italian. So, you know, I'm trying to go down the line, even though it was original Crazy Five, but more people. There were so many different writers of everywhere. That were from our neighborhood, so we're all mixed. And we didn't say African American. When I was born, my birth certificate says Negro.
Ooh,
I'm born in the mid-50s, so it says Negro back in the day.
That was another period, huh?
Yeah, it was a very different time, but none of us cared about that. Nobody cared about your nationality. All you cared about is like a bunch of teenagers having a good time, listening to fucking cool music and painting trains and kissing girls. If you were the luckiest guy there, like Ajax One, he fingered his girlfriend Laura, and then you go around and you make all the other boys smell his finger.
That's elegant. A gentleman.
Yeah. Right? I was like, wow, you know, and everybody would smell his finger because I'm like, you know, we're 15, 16 years old. You fingered a girl, you gotta smell his fucking finger. It's the coolest fucking thing.
Yeah, I get it. And, but it's also important to see that, yeah, graffiti like broke the, you know, all this basic racism and stuff like that. And it's something beautiful into our movement or whatever. It's all about painting your name, and you don't give a shit about the other people. You know, you can be friend with anybody, even the social, you know, like you can be painting with a rich guy, with a poor guy, with black, like Portuguese or whatever. Is it important for you? Is it something important?
It was important then, because when if you're around your family and relatives on the holidays, all my relatives, they bitch about the politics, the bullshit going on in the news on TV, war. And I was just like, wow, look at these stupid old people, you know, meaning 35 years old. They're all bitching about World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And I was like, wow, you know, we're just a bunch of different kids of every nationality just having fun, and you're kissing girls and having this great time, and only old people would sit around talking about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Crazy Five, everybody is 65, 70 years old. Vam talks about, hey, Blade, the things are going on in politics. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about that now. It's all bullshit. It's a bunch of millionaires and billionaires all arguing and fucking with each other, fucking up regular people. So I don't give a shit about that when I'm a teenager. I don't give a shit about that now.
Yeah. Anyway, when we are talking about graffiti, it erases everything else around, and we are just talking about that. This is some of the part, the beauty of this activity, I think. I really think it's like that. And when we see all the photos of this period, like you mentioned the Graffiti King book, we mentioned your book also, King of Graffiti, And all the photos we can see in these books, it's, yeah, it's everybody is mixed, everybody is having fun, and yeah, that's a really nice part of
it. And the best part of it the music. There's no hip-hop, no matter what they say, 50 years of hip-hop, it's not. When the original Crazy Five and the Ebony Dukes I'm trying to think of a different, the MG Squad, all the original graffiti guys, the guys from Brooklyn, even though we're all different neighborhoods, the music we're listening to is Kool & the Gang, Curtis Mayfield, Marvin Gaye, War, Mandrill, Carlos Santana. Mm-hmm. We're listening to music like that, but the music between 70 and Casey and the Sunshine Band is 1975, Donna Summer. This is fucking funk music and disco. And for the white guys, like Bam and Crotchy and Ajax and them, they're listening to Led Zeppelin. They're listening to Deep Purple. Comet's favorite group is Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, Jethro Tull. I said Led Zeppelin, right?
Yeah, of course you said Led Zeppelin.
Okay, Led Zeppelin. Yeah, but this is, you know, that's the music we're listening to. The group Kiss and stuff didn't come out to the end of the 70s. We're listening to stuff from the beginning of the 70s. Earth, Wind, and fucking Fire, man.
And what did you thought about the fact that hip-hop, like, is born, and they said hip-hop is obviously rapping, dancing, graffiti. What did you thought about that? Because it was not your life, you know, you were not living this hip-hop thing. So what do you think about that?
It's good for the people for the end of the 70s and 80s people, but what the wealthy rich people did, they took the hip-hop, the rap music, the bicycles, the skateboarding, and the breakdancing, they put that together because you can market it. You can't market it from the music we like. Because when I'm painting trains, let's say it's 1972, 73, I'm like, oh my God, Sly and the Family Stone, The Doors, Janis Joplin, Jefferson Airplane. Every song you hear in the movie Forrest Gump is the music I was doing graffiti to. And I distinctly remember we had a transistor radio. It's a little square radio the size of your hand. And we're listening to that on the layups, me and Bam. And they would talk about President Nixon and Vice President Spiro Agnew sending people into fucking Saigon in Vietnam. You're listening to Creedence Clearwater Revival, Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, you know, music like that. And we were like, holy shit. You know, we're all going to be fucked because we're born in 57 and some born in 56. And, of course, they impeached Nixon in the summer of 1974. So me and Bam and the rest of us are 17 and a half years old. And for that reason, we did not go to Vietnam.
That's a big relief.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Scene would have been the centerfold of the fucking Subway art book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's something super important because you had this stuff above your head, like maybe you could go to war. So it's a big, big pressure.
Yes, of course, because why would I want to go over to fucking Vietnam and kill people that never did anything to me because fucking Nixon said so? Fuck the president. I got no beef with the people in fucking Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's good to come back into perspective and to see what was the mindset there. So it was this big pressure to maybe, as a young kid, you had to go to war to fight and to lose your life.
But your life? Yeah. Because the president said so? Mm-hmm. Fuck him. Let him go.
Yeah. So the spirit is also you have to enjoy life maybe a little bit more than other people. Is it true, or is it maybe why all these kids jumped into this graffiti world? Because it was some freedom, maybe?
It was freedom. It was a way to have your own voice. It was a way for people not to look at you like you're invisible. Like Staff 161, Phase 2. Riff 170, T-Cool 1, Doc Cool 1, Superstruck, Spin, Bo, Juice 100, Chrome 100, King 2, Tracy, Peanut 2, Sunny 107, Kit 17, Mark 198, Boots 119. These are all guys that are just missing that era of going to Vietnam by the difference of 6 months or a year, where Flint 707, he had to go to Vietnam because he's born 1956. He had to go. Futura, where everybody knows his name all over the world, he's born November 1955. He had to go to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge pressure. And for you, so you said basically you're with your partners. So the Crazy Five, you're listening this Earth, Wind and Fire, all this music, smoking weed, being with your girlfriends, having fun, painting trains. So what was
squeezing tits, man? What is better than squeezing tits when you're 15 in 1972? Definitely. That's it. I'm gonna go home and you jerk off. It was great.
And how many times I want to know about your routine, about how many times do you paint the trains? You know, is it like every night? Is it like one time by week? What is the frequency of the painting?
Just on the weekend. You still paint during the week. Mm-hmm. You paint trains on Saturday night into Sunday morning while they're parked. If you had enough paint, if you had like 20 cans, you paint trains on Friday night. And if you could do like two or three trains, and then on Saturday night go again, you know, that way you do like maybe 8 or 10 trains in a weekend. There's nothing better. And then you go to school Monday morning, cut out of school, and then you take pictures on Monday when the trains pull out, because the trains are parked from Friday night after rush hour, and they have to have all the trains pull out on Monday morning. So you have all weekend if the trains pulled into park.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how long do you stay in the layup or in the...
All night.
All night. Okay. All night. Okay.
All night. If you're lucky enough, you go to the trains at 1 o'clock in the morning. You go home when the daylight is out. Mm-hmm. And of course, if your girlfriend is with you and it's winter time, you stay longer, because I'm like, but you got to reach down my pants. You got, right? Because you know the girl's like, your dick is like fucking steel because you're fucking a teenager, and the girl has got to reach down your fucking pants.
Yeah.
Right? It was nothing better than that.
Yeah. And I guess you don't have another place to hang out, correct? Especially in the winter. It's maybe the best place to be during the weekend.
Yes, on the weekend, you would either go to the trains if they parked. If they didn't park the trains, you had to go like walk 30, 40 minutes just walking in the fucking bitter cold, like 0 Celsius weather, walking to go somewhere else, hoping trains are parked there. And if they were not parked there, you go with your girlfriend and you go back to the same Parkside project. You go in the stairwell where they got the old radiators, the old kind, the heaters, and you just sit there and you just kiss and make out. If you were lucky, you got to explode in your pants. You know, we got all sticky, you know, and that was, and then that's it, and you go home.
Okay. What was the situation with your parents at this moment? Because if you're 15, 16 years old, and you're out all the weekend, I'm sure you come back with you.
No, you're out. You're out for one night. You put you roll your blankets up together on the bed with the pillow. Mm-hmm. So if they peek in the room, it looks like you're under the covers. And then you come back in the morning at daytime, but you come in real soft, real quiet, real easy. And everybody would steal toothbrushes to get the spray paint off your fingertips because it was lead. And it was so fucking hard to get the paint off of your top of your fingers.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. It's still hard, but now people have wearing gloves, and it's better. And do you meet people in the yards, in the layup, when you're painting? Because I'm assuming that you're not alone to paint there. There are other crews, other people, correct?
Yes, you met other writers. I met Billy 167, Shorty 5. There's different people that you would meet. Kindu from the King of the Six Train, before seen. And of course, you would meet different people. I mean, there were people that you would meet when you go into the layup from different boroughs, and you didn't have beef with them. You know, it's like, hey, man, you got purple, I got fucking school bus yellow, and you would share cans, and you would do window down whole cars with people that you had never met before in your teenage life. And everybody's just having a fucking good time. And if you were lucky, somebody has a bottle of brandy in their back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you would be like, I'm going to take a big of that. And you hand it to the other person that's just in the layup. And you go right down the fucking hatch. You didn't have to wipe the bottle. There's no COVID and all this bullshit. Everybody just passes one bottle back and forth. And you just drink it till it's fucking empty. Take a 2 or 3 hits of weed. And you have a good time.
Okay, so it was not yet all this beef that maybe in the 80s starting to arrive. Like, it was not...
No, beef was mostly 80s people, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, Blade, what about this guy? What about that guy? I'm like, I don't know. 1980, I'm 23. I got to go to work in the morning, mm-hmm. you know? I got to pay for my car insurance.
Yeah, it's another area. It's another moment, like a totally different mindset, it seems. Like more violent, it seems, or more aggressive, and maybe even the style has totally changed, correct?
Yes, they're instead of drawing cool shit on the train, the new guys are drawing like a guy with a gun,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, or doing hip hop breakdance moves. And I'm like, what the fuck is the gun for? You're supposed to be like at a party. I'm going to do a burner tonight. So you and your best friend are going to do one whole train with 10 cans each, and you're going to burn your friend off the train? Well, how's he going to feel? Right? Because you burnt him.
Yeah, and so the 70s, it's more hippie spirit, correct? A little bit more peace, maybe. Maybe you're enjoying more life because, like you said, you avoided the Vietnam War, or people who came back from Vietnam War, they don't want to be that violent, so the society is little...
No, they don't want to be... The people coming home from Vietnam in the early 70s, these guys who just want to shoot basketball, you know, play sports, fucking chill. They want to sell weed and hash because they're coming back with the best fucking herbs, man. I mean, the weed in the early 70s, you smoke this stuff, it just makes you want to, like, be creative. It didn't make you want to do anything crazy. It wasn't until cocaine and crack came in the 80s where people were fucking being, like, out of their fucking minds.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, you have people, it's like, what are you going to do? I'm going to smoke weed, smoke hash. Crazy people were doing shooting heroin. Those three kind of drugs, they make you mellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But you can feel it you can see it from the letters, from the styles of this period. You know, you can see it's extremely creative, but in the same time, it's kind of smooth. It's kind of the bubble letters start to arrive. It's something you can see it. You can see the vibe, and that's super interesting. And we can see it in your work because it's extremely creative. This is honestly why you're one of probably my favorite writer, because your creativity, you know, it's none of your pieces are the same. Maybe the big block letters, when you did these big block letters with Comet at some point, it was kind of...
That was 1977. Me and Comet invented the blockbuster because the trains were so covered. If you do a blockbuster with a clown, you cover all the bullshit on the train. It was just like, boom, a blockbuster. And that was the end of the story. You know, but what was good, when me and Comet would steal paint, or Vam Crotchy would steal paint, they would steal things, and you would do things that made it like you and your friend weren't going to burn each other in the early middle 70s. You're going to do something to do it like a combination to make it work together, like music with the Doobie Brothers or the Allman Brothers. So me and Comet are doing window downhole cars. We have to steal Rust-Oleum Gloss White. We need a black 3D. We need yellow, orange, red for the fucking background. You know, a Delta Blue to give it some pop. But we would both steal the colors all week. If he's in school and I'm cutting out, and he's like, Blade, I got 3-4 cans of white, but I couldn't find any of the Delta Blue. bang, I'm going to go to a store to get red, double, delta, blue, so there's enough for his cloud and my cloud, and then he's going to give me two cans of white for my letters to go with his letters, so everything goes together even and smooth.
Mm-hmm. And you learn to work with a partner, yeah, right? You learn to work.
You work together. Mm-hmm. You don't work to burn your partner, because mm-hmm. your partner is your fucking best friend. He's the guy you're drinking with, getting hammered with, you're squeezing tits and having a great time. I can't wait to go to the layup to burn him. Nobody would do that. That would fuck up his whole night. He's like, wow, your piece is better than mine. Well, that isn't fun for him.
Mm-hmm. But it's still a competition, correct? It's still something.
No.
No, for you, it's not a competition.
There was no competition. It was just two friends going out to have a good time. You sketch in school, and his bubble piece and my bubble piece would match. So that way, when you're painting the train, you're doing something that went together. It wasn't so his could be better than mine or mine better than his. Mine had to match what he's doing in the early middle 70s.
But the competition was maybe against other people, or it was no competition? You had to be...
No, there was the competition is with other people. Okay. Where it's like, wow, the Comet Blade window down whole car is the best one ever, better than what Lee and Slave did back in 77, 78. It had to be better than what Is the Wiz and Kaz did, or Doc Cool and T Cool, or Boots 119 would do with Kit 17. You had to do something as a two-man window down whole car that looked better than what other people did from a different crew. You know, what Tracy and Peanut would do. You wanted to do something better than what Wasp would do, you know, with Chrome 100. You know, there were so many different people, but you wouldn't do something better than your friend did, because then when you leave the layup or the yard, your friend would feel like shit. I'm like, hey, we're going to go get pizza, get a malt shake, fucking finger our girls if we're lucky tonight. Your other friend wouldn't want to do that, would you? Because you just burnt him. He'd feel like shit.
Yeah, I get it. So now maybe we can talk also about the styles, because you guys created styles, you know, the styles that we are using right now, that young guys use now. So you have been part of these people. So at what moment you were talking about Masterpiece in 1972, you were talking about the fact that it was like kind of this stick letters like that, but the style arrived around these years too, 72, 73, I think the bubble style, the 3D style start to arrive, the characters maybe in 1974.
Characters are 74.
74, yeah. So it must have been a crazy time to see these styles arriving on the subway. Can you talk about that? And can you talk about the feelings of these people coming with new styles, basically inventing something, creating something totally new? So can you talk about that?
Yes, the best thing about inventing styles at the end of 73 before 74 is that nobody had anything to bite off of or to copy off of, or where today you use the internet, or when I drive to fucking Art Basel in Miami, and even though you see all the colors, everything looks the fucking same with different people because you're all using some of somebody else's stuff. I'm like, there's nothing to bite off or copy off of in 1972, 73, 74, because it's not invented yet. We're inventing it as we go along. It's like the first person. I just had a shot of tequila, so I'm slurring. Priest 167, Pistol 1. Fuck, who else? There was like three people doing the first 3D on a train,
phase two,
three-dimensional.
Maybe? Phase 2, maybe?
Phase 2. Blint 707 in the Graffiti Kings book. Phase 2, Jester 1, and Comet helped invent the first bubble letters. Nobody said softy letters. They said bubble letters. That's the word. Specifically, bubble letters by those people. But Flint 707, Pistol, and Priest 167 from the four line. Those are the guys that were invented putting like a shadow or a 3D to give the masterpiece that was flat, to give it dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, look at that. He has two cans, but one is in for an outline. It's to give like a 3D shadow to a letter.
It must have been insane, this moment when you see this train running like that and you're like, what's that? What's so new?
Of course, because when you see that running on a train, you know, every kid in school is going to stand by one spot where you'll have like 10, 20, 30 fucking kids waiting all day drinking bottles of soda pop because you can't get alcohol when you're 15.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting to see this one train that went all the way downtown from the Bronx through Manhattan, through Brooklyn, and then you wait for it to come back just so you could see it. And you were standing in the fucking street in the sunshine for like 3 hours waiting for this one train to be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. That must have been amazing. And what about, because this is something ultra really important for you, because you made a lot of characters, like you painted a lot of characters and you own characters. So what was the feeling when in 1974, I think it's Staff 161 who painted the first character, maybe?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
So it was a game changing for you when you saw a character on the train?
Because I was like, what the fuck? Staff 161, he drew a it was a
profile,
federal safety. It was a federal safety purple piece with an orange 3D with a yellow outline with a hand coming out of the grave by a tombstone and a grim reaper, man. You know, when you saw that on a fucking train in your, so I'm 17 in 1974, that's the coolest fucking thing ever. And the train was brand new.
Wow. Wow.
So I was like, wow, you know, and he did that maybe months and months later. By the end of 1974, November, I went and I was by Billy 167 neighborhood, and I was like, I'm going to put a fucking snowman on a train for Christmas. That's when I stole the two cans of Rust-Oleum Red, a can or two of white, and one can of Marlin Blue, and a can of Rust-Oleum or Red Devil gloss black with outline. I'm like, I'm gonna put a fucking snowman on a train.
And you did it, and it was one of the greatest characters. But after that, you made tons of other characters, like the octopus, the dancing girls, all these characters.
Yes, but it was the first one that counts, right?
The first one, true.
Where that makes your dick turn to steel.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, where you just stand there and you look, and I'm like, what are you doing, man? I'm just looking. There's a fucking 8-foot, 2-meter-tall snowman on a subway train. Nobody ever did that. And you're standing there, and you're fucking 17 years old. You just... just smoking that fucking joint, looking up at the coolest thing in the fucking world. And I got a brand new train when I did it. And I'm, if you could see me right now, my face is smiling back like you just got your first bicycle on Christmas.
I'm smiling too, because I see this and I'm really happy to hear about you talking about that, because I can see the photos and yeah, I can imagine who it was and who it was for people. Seeing that running in front of them. So yeah, that's something. And something really important in your characters that I noticed too, you know, some people will redraw some existent characters from cartoons or for something else, but you really created your own universe, correct? So what was the idea behind that? It was really conscient about, I want to create my own characters, or it was just like that? What was the spirit?
When I created my own characters was when we went from marijuana to hash, and you started going from mescaline to acid. And the dancing lady train is a copy of a character that was invented or something I got from a comic book. But my joint man, my galaxy gangster, the mescaline and acid men from my swinging letters in the centerfold, the guy with the giant head on the cover of my book, those are characters that you invent when you're just doing too much drugs and being crazy.
Okay. So it was coming from that. It was coming from your brain being on drugs and seeing crazy stuff.
And so, yes, that's exactly correct. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's great. The result is great. But for example, you were talking about the characters of Tracy 168, who were like more, let's say, classic, even if at this period I'm sure it was not classic. It was, let's say, well made and well copied from some cartoon. And maybe you said you were not really close to this kind of characters. It was not what you liked the most.
No, because he did a Yosemite Sam train. It was great, but Yosemite Sam is a Warner Brothers cartoon character. But Tracy 168 and Peanut 2, his partner, they did a train of the Tracy face that you see those faces all the time. He did the first one on a train car number 7532. My double joint man train is on the other side of that car. He did that in 1975, 76, and everybody's like, it's the fucking Tracy face. It was Federal Safety Green Rust-Oleum, school bus yellow, red, black, with a couple of the designs in it. But everybody talked about TR, but the center letter of your name is a face. You didn't use a letter. Nobody ever did that before Tracy 168. He invented Wild Style. After he was in the group War, Writers Are Respected, then there was the group Wanted, and then there was the group Wild Style. Woo-hoo! And he did that end of 75 into 76. Tracy 168, Chi Chi 133, Peanut 2, King 2, Zest, Heisen 1, Sunny 107. These are the guys from Wild Style. And no matter what you see anywhere in any video of bullshit with Fab Five Freddy, that's not a real graffiti writer. Tracy 168, those are the guys that invented Wild Style.
Yeah. That's good to hear.
Fab Five Freddy has nothing to do with any of that.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear.
Or Lady Pink or none of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was interesting. What about, I want to talk a little bit about your partner for a lot of years, which was Comet. Comet, you meet him, what, in the 70s, 71, something like that?
No, he started in 71.
Oh, he started, yeah.
I didn't start till 72. Comet started in 71, and Ajax 1 was best friends with Comet. Joey Almeida is Ajax's real name, and John Calabro is Comet's real name. Portuguese and Italian, right? Who the fuck would think? And they were doing everything together. Silvertips came a little bit later. They were doing stuff in 1971. And Comet and I, if you look at the Blade King of Graffiti book, you see a picture of me and Comet in Central Park sitting on this rock.
Definitely, I have seen that. That's the moment when you started to be officially friends and you wanted to go on a mission together, correct?
Yes, we were already painting together, but that's when we painted together only. Mm. Because me and Comet are sitting on the rock. We're the only two people that can't swim.
Okay.
So everybody else is in Central Park, man. This is 10 years before the fucking Ghostbusters movie. And we're stealing boats. Crotchy and Death and the other guys, they're jumping off the fucking curvy arch bridges, jumping off into the fucking lake. And then we spent the day, how many times can we run around Central Park just grabbing bitches' asses, man?
Yeah, that's crazy. So you decided to be partners and to go to paint only together?
Damn. Yes.
Okay. So what was this period? It was the mid 70s, because you said, like, basically you're always the Crazy Five, and it's a big period of the Crazy Five crew in 74, maybe 75 to what, 76, something like that?
Yeah.
And after that, you really, you stay with Comet to paint more. Do you think, like, the Crazy Five was going down a little bit? What was happening with that?
By 75, Zam had to get a job with his father at the bakery. 1975, everybody's 18, you had to get a job. There was none of those new laws like today where you got to be 21 bullshit. The laws then, one second.
Yeah, sure.
If you drink tequila, you got to wash it down with a chaser.
Do that, please.
Right? But I got to have my chaser. So everybody in the Crazy Five is turning 18. So since there's no more Vietnam, Nixon is fucking impeached, and Spiro Agnew, they're both thrown out. So it's like, Sam's like, I got to get a job. I'm 18. The rest of us are delivering newspapers at the time. We're making $30 a week. If you made $50 a week back in 1974, 75, that was enormous money because everything cost a dime.
Yeah.
All right? Everything was a dime. It's no dollar store. Nobody has a dollar. It's fucking 10 cents. So everybody, Bam is still at the same job from 1975. If he works one more year, he'll be 67 in 2 days. He will be a 50-year man with seniority. So he's making like 250,000 euros a year now. That's fucking crazy money.
Yeah, good for him.
Yes, good for him. The rest of the Crazy Five. Crotchy 11, his real name is Mitch Weiss. If you Google Mitch Weiss, he wrote a book, Tiger Force, about Vietnam.
Whoa.
And he won the Pulitzer Prize.
Wow. Okay, so that's really serious. Really, really serious. I have to read this book.
Nothing's better than that, man. A Pulitzer fucking Prize from a fucking Jewish kid from the project wins the Pulitzer Prize. He's in a fucking tuxedo with the white shirt and the fucking tie. And he's at the Waldorf Astoria being honored. Behind the Waldorf Astoria off Park Avenue, there's an alleyway. And you go outside and you're like... And he fucking smokes a joint, and then he has to give a speech like a gentleman. And then you go upstairs in a hotel and you fuck your wife in the fucking ass. Right? After you get your Pulitzer Prize, what do you want to do? I want to fucking have sex and fucking drink champagne.
Yeah, so the Crazy Fives are like slowing down. People start to be adults. They have some responsibilities. And you, what about you? You have to work now at this moment?
I had to work, but I was still doing the newspapers. Comet's doing newspapers. Everybody else is doing newspapers. Doc Magic, Ajax's partner, he goes into the banking industry as a bank teller. He is a bank president now.
Wow. Okay, great.
Yeah, see, another one making 200 fucking thousand, 250,000 euros a year. If you see him, if I send you his picture on the 951 number, you die laughing because you'd be like, this fucking guy, if you smoke marijuana at the bank, you get fired. But since he's bank president boss, he smoked marijuana and ride motorcycle, but they don't test him because he's the boss.
That's good. Always good to be the boss. Always good.
That's right.
So you're selling a newspaper. I think you... What's your life at this moment? Because I'm sure the responsibilities start to knock at your door and you're like, okay, what I'm doing with my life, it's kind of everybody's choices, you know. At some point you're like, do I continue to paint graffiti full time? Do you you know, you have responsibilities. So what's happening with you at this moment?
At this point, it's let's say we get to 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Page 142 in the Blade King graffiti book, you see me in 1976 with the giant hair.
Mm-hmm.
I move into Dolores building, and I have to get a job because I'm 19. I work at McDonald's. I work at Burger King, you know, doing things, flipping burgers, flipping breakfast, Big Mac back, Egg Mac back for breakfast. You have to have the Egg McMuffin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing that. I'm with Dolores. She's sealing paint. I'm sealing paint. We're painting trains. And she's like, you know, you got to be careful now. We're getting older. And, you know, me and Colin are just fucking, we're taking over New York City, period. That's the priority. And no matter what, we're going to run. We're going to get away because I'm maybe 70 kilos, 75 kilos when I'm 19. Very, very skinny. And we're going to take over New York City. That kid Lee, Slave, Doc 109, Mono, whatever his fucking name was, Dirty Slug. The Fabulous Five is coming up.
Yeah, so it's also a lot of creativity at this period too, because all the people you just mentioned, they start to make like crazy pieces with like crazy characters, like crazy scenes and stuff like that. So you have
and me and Comet are fucking jealous.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
right. There you got Lee and the Fabulous Five, so we're jealous. You got Butch Two and Case Two, mm-hmm. So we're fucking jealous. You know, they're fabulous partners. All these guys are doing these fucking incredible pieces, even though they're younger. I'm like, we're not going to stop now. Is the twos and the fives? It's ours. Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan. It's fucking ours. It belongs to us, right? So no matter what anybody else does, we have to do more. So I got to wait till I get off of work to park my car and then go out and steal fucking paint.
Of course. So now you have a car, because in the past, you were moving around to rack paints by train, correct? So
by train, and then you got to walk for miles.
Yeah.
When you come home from stealing paint, you'd be like, holy shit, we got like 10, 15, 20 cans of paint. You know, you can't jump the fucking and sneak on the train because we never had any money.
Mm-hmm.
You got to walk for miles and miles and miles. You know, carrying shopping bags of paint. If I gotta go out to do something now, I'd look for my car keys, man.
Yeah, of course.
I'm like, what? The store is two blocks away. I don't walk to the store.
Yeah, but you had more energy at this period. You had way more energy and more. You're in mission. And what? How many times do you paint by week, because it's no more the weekend, correct?
No, it's still the weekend. You steal paint during the week after you get off of work, and then you got to go out and steal paint because you're never gonna fucking buy paint like a fucking fool.
Mm-hmm.
That's for fucking you know, only assholes. Like, oh, I had to buy such a, I'm like, nobody's gonna fucking buy paint in the fucking 70s or in the early 80s. So surveillance camera, you know, if there's a security guard, you know, Comet's gonna knock him out. You know, Comet's 100 kilos when everybody else is 65 kilos. You always have the big, heavy kid, right? There's always that one, the big kid in school you don't fuck with.
So you still paint only in the weekend, even if we see all the pieces you made with Comet, with all the other guys. Like, it's like you said, you painted 5,000 pieces.
500 trains a year for 10 years, and then we stopped counting.
Okay. So that's how it worked. And when you say a train, it's like a piece on the train, or is it a car, or is it a full train? How do you do the counting?
Oh, me and Kamba, we just counted whatever we did when you had these other fucking writers out there. It's like, oh, I did 50 pieces tonight. I'm like, your name is I-N. You're doing some bullshit under a fucking window, and you do the letter I-N in fucking bullshit silver. No real writer would use fucking silver or copper and bullshit fake colors, right? I'm like, you did an I-N, and you count that as one piece. I did the whole fucking train with 20 fucking colors as one, and you count the letter I-N as one? Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is why I wanted your point of view about that, because I was like, what it means exactly, you know? Because you're totally right. If you do a throw-up with two letters, you can make 5,000 in 2 weeks, maybe. Maybe not 2 weeks, but, you know...
Yeah, of course, because it's fucking bullshit. The only real graffiti writers from the time, me, Comet, Lee, Scene, PJ, Dust, These are people doing fucking Matt. Well, Matt and Cena are the same person. It's his brother, but doing real whole cars, man. Nah, I did two letters in a corner. So I'm like, well, if you have four cans of paint, you could do 50 fucking trains, man. Mm-hmm. Toy. Mm-hmm.
So for you, because, you know, after that in the 80s, the shrubs, like the two-letter shrubs, start to blow up. We talked about that a little bit. It was not the same energy. But you... How did you felt about that? How did you felt about the energy changing, the people making shrubs everywhere, the kind of beef between everybody? What was your opinion about this period? It was a transition, correct?
It was a transition, but none of us, no real writer from the 70s, we didn't pay attention to the two-letter name guy. Mm-hmm. We didn't pay, and by 1980, you know, that toy tap, you know, people doing three-letter names, two-letter names. People are like, Blade, how come Tap did Tap and Tap? I'm like, the fuck do I know? It's 1980. I'm 23 years old. I'm on my way to work at 8 in the morning, and Tap is some kid in high school. Should I drive my car to his high school?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, I could never. Well, you see, officer, this tall kid, he wrote over my name on the train.
But you understood that the competition was growing up, you know, like it was no more like I'm making the best piece, the best style, the best, scene or whatever. It was more about, I think, in my point of view, it was this transition was more about competition. I have to be everywhere and I don't give a shit if it's ugly or what. I will be everywhere. It was something that changed the entire scene, I guess?
Pretty much, yes. I know that the other kids that came along after me, Scene and the younger kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, but everything that I did was with the original guys that nobody talks about. The best graffiti book is the Graffiti Kings book by Jack Stewart. That's the way the Subway Art book came out first. With Martha and Henry, but the first book that should have come out is the Graffiti Kings book. That is the absolute best, most authentic book ever made, because that guy was there from 69 to 79. That's why you don't see Scene, you don't see that kid Crash and those other fucking kids, because they weren't fucking there. They were all talking about, yeah, back in the day, the 70s, and I'm like, yo, Crash, you know you're a fucking toy. You have nothing to do with the history of anything. You're an 80s guy. That's why everything is in Subway Art. Your real stuff is in the Graffiti Kings book by Jack Stewart.
But he has been published way later. So the Martha and Chalfant and Henri book, Subway Art, has been the key for a lot of writers, you know, to read the New York history. You know that, like in Europe, I've seen this book, it blew my mind, and this is why I wanted to do the same, and it's the same for...
Of course, because when you see the Subway Art book, you see the pretty colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see that, you see the spirit, you see the ambience, you see something that makes you dream, you know? So you're like, I want to do the same in my neighborhood, but you know the impact of this book, you know the impact of this book. But what you say is it's a huge impact, but it's not really the truth of a certain period, correct?
No, it's the truth of what happened in the 80s.
Okay.
But if you want the truth of what happened in the 70s, you want to look at and read the Graffiti Kings book, because it's written by a Yale professor, and he is going to look at it from his perspective as an old man, 40 years old, just taking pictures of what he sees, of how he saw it, his point of view. Martha and Henry's book in the 80s with Subway Art is, of course, you're going to see the pretty colors, because everything's developed. You look at Graffiti Kings, you're like, this is bullshit, nothing, but it shows the beginning of how it got to make it to the Subway Art 80s colors.
Mm-hmm. And what do you, when it happened, so when Subway Art has been published, I think it was 1984, what was the impact for you on your life when you saw this book?
It was great for me because I got the centerfold.
Mm-hmm, exactly. crazy
if,
one.
If you have the subway, if you have the subway book in your house, you look at the centerfold. You look under those silver things that I do to make the letters look like they're swinging in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You look under it. I went over Scene and Jason and PJ. I covered their whole fucking train. People look at the centerfold of subway art a million times for 30 fucking 40 years. They're like, oh shit, you went over Scene and PJ and Jason. And I'm like, those fucking kids don't count. But you have to look at the Hip Hop Files book by Martha Cooper, and you see what the train was that was there before I go over them.
Okay, good to know how I look at it.
It's like a puzzle when you put the books together.
Okay, good, really good.
Nobody has the Hip Hop Files book. What do you drink, kid? When you're drinking, what do you drink?
I'm not drinking alcohol anymore.
I know, but that's why there was no sound on my side of the phone for 3 seconds. I'm like,
You're shocked. You're shocked.
Yes, I was like, what the fuck? 48 years old and you quit drinking?
Yeah, I've quit drinking like 3 years ago. And yeah, I'm feeling better with that. I'm feeling better. Yeah. Okay. Really interesting. But something also about the moment when you painted with your partner Comet, because we have talked about that, but kind of quickly, I want really people to realize how many of this painting you made at this period and how motivated you to were to paint everywhere. Because we talked about the big block letters that you created to cover a little bit the all the trains. But you said you make like something like 400 of them?
Easily. Me and Comet would just steel paint just to do blockbusters on purpose by the end of the 70s. We would purposeless, like, what are you going to do this week? I need 5 cans of the same color just to do a blockbuster to cover people. You know, because the trains were getting fucked up with these 2-letter and 3-letter nothings.
Mm-hmm.
So you just be like, and it's gone.
Yeah, of course. And it's also these big blocks that you can see from super far, and you can have this super nice photo of Martha, for example, where you can see the trains from far away, you can see the skyline, you can see all these buildings around, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and in the 80s, we have talked about how the scene changed a little bit, and you start to put maybe your go on the side and slowing down your graffiti. At what moment did you kind of stop painting on trains? And you...
1984.
Okay.
I do my last blockbuster, which is in the Blade King of Graffiti book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do the last blockbuster on a train because, you know, I have a job. I got to keep working. I'm 27 years old in 1984, which means you're almost 30 years old. I got to work. I got to put Dolores to school. Comet is in prison. So I was doing trains with Scene for a few years. I think for like 2 or 3 years from 81 to 84, I just do trains with Scene. And then I just stopped because I'm like, I'm doing gallery shows in Amsterdam with Yaki Kornblit, Hank Pinenberg, and Vincent Blasblum, and Wilhelm Spierstra.
Mm-hmm. Spierstra, which is really funny because, yeah, I'm having an exhibition soon with the son, Wilhelm Spierstra, so the son of the guy you're talking about, and they are real passionate about this in the family, and I have interviewed him in the podcast too. So yeah, that's cool that we can mention that you mentioned Spierstra.
Well, it's true. He has, I think, 3 paintings of mine from somewhere between 82 and 85. Mm. He has my old ones, but everything was really big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because at this period, it's really interesting to know how you did this transition from painting the subway, painting, having this freedom of this huge canvas that will run into the city, and painting on a small piece of canvas. Who was this transition? It was easy. It was difficult.
It was difficult because you're going from like these giant trains.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you've got to make it smaller. I'm like, if I make it smaller, I can make it 1 or 2 meters by 2 or 3 meters. That was small.
Yeah, and that's still a big canvas.
I just, on canvas, it seems enormous now.
Yeah.
But when they ask us to do that, I'm like, you know, trains are what, 8 meters?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you got to make it small. I'm like, all right, here's 2 or 3 meters. That was small. Me, Gandhi, Futura, Lee, we're all doing things the size of fucking trains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And when you mentioned Jack Steward, when I was reading the book, like recently, I was rereading the book to, because I love this book too. And he was talking about the fact that when kids started to paint on canvas, they were losing the spirit of what was graffiti, you know, like the freedom, the illegality, the fact that it's illegal, the fact that it's moving. They were losing all that, and it was no more graffiti. It was something else. It was maybe art, but it was no more graffiti. What is your opinion about that?
What he was saying was right about the paintings that were made by 1990s. You lost the energy of, oh shit, at any minute the police are coming. Mm-hmm. The energy is gone in the artwork, you know? And I kept trying to paint the graffiti. Scene kept trying to paint the graffiti quick. Tried to paint the graffiti the way it had the energy of the trains, was about your name going by. That's the original way it's supposed to be. Not where I'm like, oh, I'll do a little now. I think I go to the toilet. Oh, my wife is making dinner. I do some more tomorrow or next week. Fuck that. It's supposed to have the energy and the excitement of, oh, shit, the police are coming.
And did you translate it, this energy? Did you manage to translate this energy on canvas, or it was never the same?
It was the same for me. If you look at my paintings from the 80s, I still do the letters, 90s, I do the paintings today, that I still try to do the same thing with the same energy, mm-hmm. but it's harder because I'm like, I'm older now, I think I'll go take a nap, and after I take my nap, I get up later, and then I'm going to have dinner, I'm going to watch my TV show with the remote control, I'm going to drink a couple of beers and watch football. That you can't get the energy back that you got between the first paintings from 81 to 1990.
Of course.
That's the best time period because you're getting the excitement of, oh my God, the police are coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate with that. And what do you think now, because we are talking about Art Basel, Miami, all this industry today about graffiti and about all this museum being interested into graffiti and all these things, this money, this market, this industry. So what do you think of who became graffiti? Do you still interested into, I don't know, on the internet, watching maybe people, what they are doing on subways? Are you still interested?
I never watch. And what's good is I don't know how to use the internet. I have people running the internet for me. They're like, Blake, what? I know how to use my little bullshit cell phone, right? And I don't use the internet. I don't want to see the internet. I don't want to learn new ideas from anybody because everything you learn is, back in the day, was called fucking biting and copying, you being a copycat. I like drinking my tequila and my soda, and then I go down and I paint, and that's it.
Okay, so you don't want to be influenced by anything else than what you have in mind right now?
No, okay. Absolutely not. I see these fucking new writers and old writers where they're like, oh, I'm going to do stencil. Stencil? The fuck is that? Who brought a stencil to the train yard? Nobody. Yeah. Bullshit. It looks really nice, but it's not real.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about the money into this world? Because now you started to make canvas, to paint it canvas in 1984. We are in 2024. Okay, so it's been 30 years, 40 years.
40 years.
40
the
years.
Money, of course, the money part is very good. I buy my house, my pool, the cars, my property, my bank. So I make money from it. But I like it because I don't listen to people like Jeffrey Deitch, mm-hmm. people that are going to tell me what I better do. And the people that tell me that hip hop is something, and I'm like, I'm not listening to fucking hip hop. I know nothing about hip hop. I'm listening to the music of Sly and the Family Fucking Stone and Creedence Clearwater Revival and the music that I came along with and Kool and the Gang from 72, 73.
So you think maybe these kind of people, Jeffrey Deitch or other people, are writing another history of graffiti? It's not the history that...
It's not the true form of graffiti. It's not the true form of what happened at the time. It's like they're trying to take away the 1970s mm-hmm. from the people that helped invent it. Because when I came home from school, I'm going to listen to Curtis Mayfield and Marvin Gaye. And I'm listening to Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I get it. But why do you think these people want to picture this period differently, or they focus on a certain moment? Because for what reason?
Because they make money. They make money from it. Graffiti, hip-hop, breakdancing, skateboarding, the bicycle kids flipping over on their fucking heads has nothing to do with anything. All the music that came along from the original graffiti writers came along with the music you listen to in Forrest Gump. In Forrest Gump movie, there's this one scene, Happy New Year, Lieutenant Dan, and Lieutenant Dan is sitting there with no fucking legs with two prostitutes and Forrest Gump, and he's sitting there. You listen to the music, the Happy New Year, 1972. And Lieutenant Dan is sitting there with no legs in his wheelchair. That's the fucking music. Nobody's breakdancing to that.
Yeah, of course. But it was later that breakdancing and all this stuff arrived. But did you realize
1979 is when you hear the Sugar Hill Gang play the song, the hip, the hop, the hibbity, the hibbity, the hip, the hop, the bop, bop, the dobbity, don't this, that, and that kind of stuff. And Grandmaster Flash, 1979, 1980. That has nothing to do with what happened in 1970 to 79. You didn't hear that. Donna Summer is singing disco. Casey and the Sunshine Band. Tavares. The Bee Gees with John Travolta dancing. This is what happened in the 70s. Kool and the Gang is playing a song. Open Sesame!
And I understand that. I understand that the pioneers are far away from hip-hop and from what we had. For example, the message that we had in Europe, you know, that graffiti was related to hip-hop. But you understand also that this combination of hip-hop, rap, and graffiti was the only thing that we had, for example, in Europe and all over the world. You know, it was this stuff that has been sold to us, you know. And you think it's a kind of it's a mistake, it's a big mistake, or it was something real? Maybe it's not the same period, we get it, it's not the same period, but is it still real, or for you it's just something that has been made up?
It's just pretty much made up so they can make money. Even Zephyr Revolt, the guys that are a little bit younger than me, mm-hmm. they didn't listen to that stuff either. They listened to the real music for that time of day. A graffiti guy named Sar, he wrote with Satch and Is the Wiz.
Of course.
They're listening to the Bee Gees. Mm-hmm. Disco, dancing with John Travolta in the movie. They're listening to that. They're not listening. Scene is not listening to hip hop. He's listening to rock and roll. You know, if you're an 80s writer, you're listening to fucking Van Halen. You know, you're listening to you're listening to Rush.
Yeah, that's a little bit sad, you know, to hear that for a lot of people who are passionate about hip hop and the hip hop of the early hip hop, you know, and be these people in Europe, all over the world, they were really convinced that hip-hop was, graffiti was related to that, you know, and they built their life on everything around that. And that's just interesting to hear your point of view about that. Yeah.
Well, it's not just my point of view. If you talk to anybody that's in a real deal original writer, that's what they're going to be listening to. You're going to watch the movie Shaft, mm-hmm. and the music is going to be fucking Isaac Hayes. Right? You're going to watch the movie Superfly and Shaft. If you watch those two movies, you're not going to see anybody with my old haircut spinning on his fucking head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And, you know, we talk about the pioneers like that and the very beginning of graffiti in New York. Do you think you're part of the pioneers, or do you think you arrived a little bit later? Who are the real pioneers for you? And are you part of these guys?
The real pioneers for me in graffiti are Tacky 183, Joe 182, Santos, I believe, 204, Superstrut, the guys that came just before me between 1970, Turok 161, Charmin 65, as the first girl, Barbara and Eva 62, Michelle 62. They were, those are the girl writers that you see at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
The people that were from before, Staff 161 was before me. You know, those are the names you see. Bug 170, Eminem 71, Neil 182. These are the names that you see from 70 to 72 before me. Cool Cliff 120.
And all these people, have you seen their name, or have you seen their name on the trains, or have you heard about that?
No, these are names I see on the train from 70 to 72 as a 13-year-old, and I see those names there before me.
You know something? Finish, please. No, you're good. Okay. Something I think is extremely interesting, it's also the fact that you're in the Bronx, okay? You're in the North Bronx, but you're talking about Eva or Barbara or even Tacky or 161. They are from other neighborhoods. Some are from Manhattan, some other from Brooklyn or something. And it's really super interesting that the train has been the canvas for our culture, graffiti culture, but the fact that it's moving, you know, the fact that it's moving, you can really you're introduced to the work of people being kind of far from your neighborhood. So it opens your perspective about, you know, people are living somewhere else and all this stuff. It was something important for you? Is it something that was part of your comprehension of what you were doing, that other people were doing the same but far from your neighborhood?
Yes, they're doing the same thing far from my neighborhood, but you get to see their names anywhere you go in the city. I'm like, oh my God, it's super cool, 223. It's Stay High, 149. It's Eddie, 181. It's Take Five. You know, you're seeing these names all over the city. You know, as I'm 15 years old in 72, these other names are already every place. Gun 229, Bo 61, Cat 2233, fuck, Jambu 2, Spec 1, 229, Tip 2, which is KITU. You're seeing these names all over the city. Everybody, Moses 147, Piper Junior 161, Cliff 159. These are names you're seeing all over the city, everywhere by 1972, everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And you know where they're coming from, in which neighborhood they're coming from, because they have the letters of their neighborhood on their name, correct?
No, but you don't know where they're coming from. You're just somewhere with your parents, and you're like, wow, there's that name again, as you're, you know, shopping at a department store with your family, and they don't know that you're looking at it, where you're like, wow, it's Eddie 181 and Stay High 149, Lee 163rd.
To finish this conversation, maybe, who is for you the the best graffiti writers of this time, you know, your time. For you, who was the best or maybe the most influential one, or the one who influenced you the most?
Super Cool 223.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the one. For what reason?
It was everywhere. It was everywhere.
And when you say everywhere, it's on the trains or it's also in the streets?
Trains, buses, walls, boats. You go on a boat to go to Long Island, you had to ride the Long Island ferry boat. His fucking name is on the fucking ferry boat going out of the five boroughs to Long Island and Staten Island. He's on the Staten Island ferry boat. I was like, holy shit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive. That's impressive. You know what, Blake? What's the we finish this talk? Maybe it was super interesting. I'm sure people, French people, will love what you had to say. What's the future for you? What's the next show? What are you working on? What's next for you?
I'm doing a show at the Straat Museum in Amsterdam, August, September 2024.
Great.
It's being, everything is being going to a man named Vincent Blastroom at Blastroom and Productions, .com, a Dutch collector. And he's making everything happen for me as my boss and my friend. And he's making sure, since my wife died a year and a half ago, that I keep painting and doing everything good.
Okay, that's great, and we'll promote your show, and I hope I will be able to see it. It will be old pieces or new work?
No, it'll be new works. Okay. I have maybe 8 or 10 old pieces, and the first painting I ever make is in my home.
Okay.
And I have the original sketch of the centerfold of subway art from 1980.
Great.
And everybody's like, we want to buy it. I'm like, then give me €1 million.
Hopefully. You deserve that. You deserve having this €1 million for sure for that. So I hope somebody will pay the right price for this right piece of history.
Of course, they pay €500,000 for Basquiat for some scribbly bullshit from a toy that was putting cocaine and heroin in his fucking body. At the same time, he's drinking Jack Daniel's whiskey, and he never even did trains. He's fucking nothing. Keith Haring, he never did nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you understand also, you're in this game since a while now, so you understand that the art world is something totally separated from the graffiti world, you know, even if now people from graffiti makes money, but it's two different things, you know what I mean?
Two different genres, two different things, but for the people like myself that helped invent it, they're like, Blade, what do you think of Basquiat or Keith Haring? I'm like, I don't give a fuck about them. They're all younger than me, and so I don't give a shit. I give a shit for me, people like Futura, people like Lee, people that were really out there in the very beginning of everything that is still here. Not trash. Fucking some 80s kid that's copying Lichtenstein. That's not fucking me. It's nothing.
Oh, the message is out now. Yeah, great. Thank you very much, Blade. It was really, really, really a huge pleasure to talk to you. You have been real. You're a huge part of graffiti history, and I hope people will have enjoyed this talk.
Yes, and I only had 7 tequila while we were on the phone, so I'm okay.
Thanks a lot, man.
Good night. Bye-bye.